Good morning. It is time once again for Kale and Company here on WKXL and HTalkRadio.com. It is a delight to have you with us on this Monday morning. I hope everyone has sufficiently recovered from their St. Patty's Day celebration, if you had one at all. I checked in with our producer behind the glass, Andrew Gibson, said he didn't celebrate very much, and nor did I. And, you know, St. Patrick's Day for a long time has been called amateur night, you know, for, like, amateur drinkers. And I'm certainly not saying that that we are professional drinkers, but it's like amateur night. And that's why there was such a stepped-up patrol of police officers on the highways of New Hampshire last night. So at any rate, it was a great day for many. Maybe not such a great Monday morning for everybody, but at any rate, we're glad to have you with us here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We have John Leahy coming up, who put on an internet performance yesterday, doing some great Irish tunes, and we'll talk with John about Hockey East. The semifinals are set for Men's Hockey East, and we will talk with Steve Callanan, a former New Hampshire state trooper who is a member of the New Hampshire Police Association Pipes and Drums, and they will be having their annual banquet coming up in Manchester this Saturday. They are a terrific organization, and we will talk with Steve about the banquet and about the group itself that has been around now for over 20 years. It was a busy weekend, as always, in the world of sports. The Celtics kind of shorthanded last night, but it was against the worst team in the NBA, the Washington Wizards, so it really didn't matter. Celtics cruised to a 130-104 victory in our nation's capital Sunday night. Sam Hauser was on fire last night. He made 10 of 13 from three-point range. The all-time Celtics record for three-pointers in a game, 11. And Sam Hauser had 10 in just 22 minutes of action. However, early in the third quarter, he got tangled up with a photographer and wound up having to leave the game immediately due to what appeared to be a lower body injury, as they say these days. So Hauser was gone for the rest of the game, so he could not erase Marcus Smart's record for three-pointers in a game by a Boston Celtic, which is 11. Sam Hauser had 10. Marcus Smart in a game had 11. Now, I don't remember that game. I really don't. But for Marcus Smart to make 11 threes in a game, he must have taken about 100 shots. But Sam only took 13 yesterday. He made 10 of them and was well on his way to eclipsing. That's a popular term these days. Eclipsing Marcus Smart's record, but could not. Hopefully, he'll be able to play tonight when the Celtics will take on the equally woeful Detroit Pistons at TD Garden. But Hauser had 30 points in the game, all on threes. Jason Tatum also had 30 points in the game. Celtics played without the services of Kristaps Porzingis, Jaylen Brown, and Derek White. But it didn't seem to matter, as they won by 26 points going away. It could have been worse than that, but, you know, they took it a little bit easy on the Wizards. So that was that, and they will be back at the Garden tonight to take on the Detroit Pistons. Now, I know a lot of people excited. Some people aren't, but a lot of people are excited about college basketball at this time of year because it's March Madness. And the brackets for the men's and women's tournaments were announced last night. CBS said the men's bracket announcement at 6 o'clock and then followed at 8 on ESPN by the women's bracket announcement. So the NCAA men's and women's tournaments begin later on this week. And in the men's bracket, defending champion UConn, the Huskies, our number one seed, along with Houston, Purdue, and North Carolina. UConn will be opening up defense of their title Friday in Brooklyn at Barclays Center against number 16, Stetson. And the women's top seeds are undefeated South Carolina. Can anyone beat the Lady Gamecocks? Iowa, of course, with Kristen Clark, who was the Caitlin Clark, I should say, who was the number one scorer in the history of women's basketball and men's basketball, for that matter. So she will be leading Iowa. USC is one of the top seeds, and also Texas. And I think everybody will be focusing on Caitlin Clark, because she has been the most talked about player in college basketball this year, men's or women's. So they'll be focusing on her, and it's a lot of fun. People fill out brackets who know nothing about college basketball. Most people only follow college basketball when the tournament is going on. And there's always that story about, you know, when offices have their NCAA bracket challenge and maybe put a little money in, you know, office pools and what have you. It's usually, and I don't mean to be sexist about this, but it's usually the secretary who knows nothing about basketball at all that wins the brackets. So we'll see what happens in your place of business. What else? A lot of stuff went on. The Red Sox, they won yesterday. They beat the Yankees. Now, I know it was only a Grapefruit League game, but they did. And they scored 9 runs in the first inning yesterday against the Yankees in Fort Myers. Raffy Devers, Trevor Story, and Connor Wong all homered in the first inning for the Red Sox. 12-4, they beat the Yankees in a split squad game. I mean, there weren't too many Yankees you would recognize playing for New York. But, hey, a win over the Yankees is a win no matter when it is. And also the other split squad of the Red Sox played in Northport, Florida, and they tied with the Braves 3-3. Denny Hamlin won Sunday's NASCAR Cup race in Bristol. He was followed by Martin Truex Jr. and Brad Keselowski. Scotty Scheffler captured the PGA's Players' Championship in Florida. And there was another note in the NCAA tournament that I wanted to pass along. New Mexico is in the tournament. Not that that makes any difference to most people, but New Mexico, first of all, is coached by Rick Pitino's son, Richard. So Richard's New Mexico Lobos made the tournament, and his dad's team, St. John's, did not. So Richard Pitino will be going to the NCAA tournament. Rick Pitino and St. John's were invited to the NIT, but they declined. They will not play in the NIT. Now, a player on that New Mexico team is Jalen House. And he is the son of former Celtic and now NBC Sports Boston commentator Eddie House. He's going to play for New Mexico, and they won the title yesterday, as a matter of fact, in the Mountain West tournament. And Jalen House, son of Eddie, had 28 points in that 68-61 win over San Diego State for the New Mexico Lobos to capture the Mountain West championship. And Eddie House was in attendance, and he says he's going to have to take some time off from his work at NBC Sports Boston so he can follow his son as far as he goes in the NCAA men's basketball tournament. So I guess we can declare March Madness is officially underway. People will be filling out their brackets. I'm sure some are filling them out right now, even as we speak. So we're going to now turn our attention right after the break to the world of college hockey. And John Leahy is going to be joining us, our Hockey East guru, to take a look at the semifinal matchup. Matchups, I should say, coming up this Friday night at TD Garden. And I want to wish a very happy birthday today to our good friend Dan Weed. Happy birthday, Dan. Hope you have a wonderful day and look forward to having you back in the studio in the not-too-distant future. We will take a break. Kale and Company will continue after these words on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Welcome back. It is Kale and Company live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, and we welcome back our Hockey East guru, John Leahy. John, good morning to you.
Jim, good morning to you.
And John, I know put on a great show yesterday online, did some fabulous Irish tunes for St. Patrick's Day. And how did it go, John? I have not yet had a chance. I had a great hockey banquet with Concord High School yesterday, their season-ending banquet, which was a great time. Unfortunately, I had to miss your live performance. Is it up on Facebook?
Well, actually, nobody got to hear the live performance, Ken, because we had technical difficulties.
Oh, come on!
So I played for 2 hours, and I didn't realize anybody couldn't hear it, so... I'm going to run a test tonight, correct the problem, and we are going to rebroadcast the whole show on Wednesday night
on
7 to 9.
So it is recorded then?
It is recorded, and I have it for posterity, but we had some difficulty. I think I've identified the problem. We're going to run a test tonight, and hopefully Wednesday night at 7, we're going to rebroadcast it in its entirety.
Oh, well, all right, so make a note of that, folks, and where can people find it?
If you go to my website, Ken, which is at johnrleahy.com, there's a tab across the top. It says More. If you click on that, then there's a pull-down menu, and you just click on Internet Radio and scroll to the bottom, and that's where you'll hear it.
All right, outstanding. We will look forward to that. And, John, the semifinal matchups were determined over the weekend for the Hockey East tournament at TD Garden on Friday night. So tell us what took place.
Well, we had the quarterfinals this past weekend, Ken. We had four games, four terrific games. Boston College and UConn played a terrific game. It was BC in control after two periods. They led 4-1, but UConn made a furious rally in the third to come back and tie the game. BC would immediately answer, and they hung on for the 5-4 win. Boston University picked up a solid victory at home over a very tough Northeastern team by a score of 4-2. UNH and Maine in the border battle up in Orono, Maine. It did not go well for the Wildcats as Maine posted a 5-0 shutout. And UMass picked up a victory on the road at Providence, a hard-fought 3-1 win. So that sets up the semifinals at the TD Garden on Friday, Ken. You're going to have two excellent matchups. You're going to have UMass taking on BC. That is the early game at 4 o'clock. BC won both of the regular season games between the two teams. And Maine will take on Boston University at 7:30. And BU swept the two games against Maine during the regular season. So those are the matchups. It's the semifinals, a doubleheader at the Garden on Friday.
Well, I'll tell you, that's going to be a terrific doubleheader. I would imagine that tickets are rather scarce for those two games. There may be some available on the secondary market, but what a doubleheader that is going to be. Are you going to be there, John?
Yes, indeed, Ken. I got my credential request approved, so I'm going to be there both nights, and I'm really looking forward to two terrific games. BU and Maine is going to be terrific. I think that one could go either way, although BU would probably have a slight edge, and I think UMass is going to give BC all they can handle. So Greg Carville's team is playing really well. So I predict two very close, exciting games.
Well, I know college hockey's postseason certainly does not get the coverage or the publicity of college basketball's tournament season, March Madness, but there are just as many, if not more, exciting moments in the hockey postseason as there are in the basketball postseason.
Hockey's better, and here's why I think so. If a hockey game in college hockey playoff game goes into overtime, you keep playing until there's a winner. The drama just intensifies with every shift. College basketball, hey, I'll give you the buzzer beaters. I'll give you the Sweet 64 where the upsets rule, and that's all well and good. But give me college hockey any day. Love those overtime. And yeah, you're right, Ken. It generates a lot of excitement. And you're right, not as much as the college basketball tournament, but give me college hockey any day.
Yeah, I mean, if you added up the amount of time that is given to the coverage of the NCAA men's and women's basketball tournaments, I mean, it would dwarf the coverage that college hockey gets, which I think is unfortunate. But that's the way the networks see it, that college basketball is more popular, has wider appeal. But I mean, if you watch the postseason in college hockey, folks, you will have many thrills and chills along the way, no doubt about it, and see some of the up and coming stars who will soon be in the National Hockey League. And one that I'm thinking about here, John, is somebody I'm sure you have seen play on any number of occasions, and that would be Macklin Celebrini. What does he bring to the table from BU? I should tell people.
Every aspect of the game. He just dominates the game. He draws attention to himself just wherever he is on the ice, whether he has the puck, whether he doesn't have the puck. Second in Hockey East in goals, only to BC's Cutter Gauthier. Macklin Celebrini is projected to be the first pick in the next NHL draft, so he will probably only spend one season at Boston University, just like Jack Eichel did. But he's a special player. I've seen him on numerous occasions, and he can take over a game by himself. He's really a special player to watch. So if you have a chance to catch him this weekend, I really encourage you to do so. All the games will be on Nesson, so if you can't be at the Garden, you can watch it on TV. But take a look at how this kid dominates games, and you'll be so impressed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I've only seen him play in one game, quite honestly, on TV. But he is certainly worth a watch. And as you mentioned, John, everybody says that Macklin Celebrini will be the number one draft choice in the NHL during the next draft. And he is all of 17 years old. It's amazing.
Yeah, he's the youngest player in all of college hockey, but he's wise beyond his years, Ken, and they really know how to attract him at BU. But also take a look at BC. Take a look at their freshman line of Will Smith, Ryan Leonard, and Will Perreault. It is probably the best freshman line ever put together, although Perreault has been battling injuries, and BC hopes to get him back. But between that top line at BC and the outstanding Nadeau brothers from Maine, you're going to have a dearth of talent to watch in the semifinals, Ken. And it's going to be gripping, riveting hockey for sure.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And again, 4 o'clock on Friday, UMass taking on Boston College at 7 o'clock. 7:30? Is it 7:30 on Friday? Maine will take on BU, and the aforementioned Macklin Celebrini, who will be probably, in all probability anyway, John, playing his last few games for Boston University.
Yeah, well, BU is hoping to make some waves in the national tournament. So
sure.
Celebrini hopes to play beyond the Hockey East playoffs. But it's exciting not just for Hockey East this weekend, because we've reached the semifinals in all of the conferences, and that'll kick off Friday. We already know one championship game in college hockey, and that's going to be in Atlantic Hockey. AIC will take on RIT on Saturday. So my favorite time of the year, Ken. I love it when championship season rolls around, and certainly Hockey East will be no exception.
That is for sure. And, you know, all signs point to a BC-BU Hockey East final, but strange things can happen, as you well know, and upsets are not out of the realm of possibility. But I would think, John, that no matter what, that both BC and BU, who have been at the top of the national rankings all year long, no matter what happens in this Hockey East tournament, they will both be going to the NCAA tournament.
And not only will both of them be going, Maine's going to be going as well, because the Black Bears are sixth in the pairwise. UMass really improved their playoff, their NCAA hopes with that win down at Providence. So I think Hockey East is going to be sending four teams to the national tournament. And yeah, it would be easy to select BC and BU to play in that championship game. But here's the thing. If Maine and UMass win these games, it's not going to be considered an upset to me, because I think these are the four best teams right now in Hockey East, and I think that all four of them are playing their best hockey. So while I wouldn't be surprised to see a BCBU final, it also wouldn't surprise me to see Maine or UMass get to that title game as well.
There you go. You heard it from the Hockey East guru himself, John Leahy, who will be posting, or at least hopefully will be posting, his St. Patrick's Day concert on Wednesday night, folks. So, again, give people the address where they can find it.
Yep, Ken, if you go to johnrleahy.com and click on the internet radio link there, you'll be taken right to it. And we're going to run a quick test tonight. We're going to ensure everything is fine. And if all goes well, we'll have it Wednesday night at 7.
All right. Well, John, as always, great chatting with you, and I know you will have a great time Friday and Saturday nights at the TD Garden. Enjoy.
Ken, thanks so very much. I look forward to it, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks. John Leahy, the 19-year voice of the Merrimack College Warriors, who unfortunately won't be in the tournament this year, but they have been in years past. And John, kind enough to join us every Monday here on Kale & Company. We'll take a break and talk about something completely different right after these words on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Welcome back. It is Kale & Company Live right here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental, with individual and family plans designed to fit your lifestyle. You can learn more and find your plan at DeltaDentalCoversMe.com. And we're going to open this segment with a clip from WMUR News that was on Channel 9 about a year ago. Here's Amy Covino.
Members of the New Hampshire Police Association Pipes and Drums are spending their Easter in Ireland. Take a listen. Yesterday, the group played in the Cork City Easter Rising Commemoration Parade in Cork, Ireland. The pipe band consists of over 30 members from over a dozen departments throughout the state. It was formed in 1994 following the death of State Police Sergeant James Noyes. Each year, the pipe band performs at over 100 events throughout the New Hampshire area.
And joining us now is a member of the New Hampshire Police Association Pipes and Drums, Steve Callanan. Steve, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Ken.
Great to have you with us. And did you spend your Easter last year in Ireland?
Yes, we did. We did. We were spreading a good cheer over there. It was a very nice time.
It must have been a lot of fun to... Now, what town were you in Ireland?
Well, we went over to Cork. We were up in Galway for a little while, and we just kind of visited the neighborhoods and the beautiful country over there.
Yeah, and we learned in the clip we just heard that ran on WMUR that the New Hampshire Police Association Pipes and Drums was formed after the tragic death of State Police Sergeant James Noyes. How did it all come about? After the tragic death of Sergeant Noyes, how was the association formed?
Well, Boston Police, the Pipes and Drums, they came up and they actually played for the funeral. We did not have a band at the time. And after that, we decided, well, geez, you know, we need to get this done. And with the help of Boston, we at the birth of the New Hampshire Police Association Pipes and Drums came into fruition.
And were you one of the original members?
No, I was not. I've been on about 15 years. I think I started in 09.
So when did you start playing the bagpipes?
About 2009. Yeah, I started. So I came into law enforcement in 97 and got into the pipes, 2009.
Now, when the association started, did all the members of the Corps have bagpipe experience?
No, we actually have a teacher that comes in and teaches us every Tuesday night, and all members of law enforcement are welcome to come down and participate in the band, and we teach, if you have no music or anything at all, you can come on down, and we'll teach you how to play and join the team.
Well, that's a lot of fun. So Saturday night coming up is going to be the New Hampshire Police Association Pipes and Drums annual fundraiser at St. George Orthodox Cathedral in Manchester from 6 until 10 o'clock. And tell us what we can expect on Saturday night.
Oh, great. Yes, this is our 30th anniversary year, and we host the annual fundraiser. It's a corned beef and cabbage fundraiser. And we host it at the St. George's Greek Orthodox Church in Manchester. And we have Aaron Zog out of Boston. They come up. They're an Irish folk band. And they play. And we have raffles and 50-50 items. And we just have a good time and a good dinner. Belmont Hall is going to cater the event. It's just a really good time to come on out and just celebrate Irish heritage and raise a little money for a good cause.
And I know if you go on the website, nhpipesanddrums.com, nhpipesanddrums.com, there's a way to get tickets. I know it says that you have to order by March 15th. I know it says that. However, Steve, I was able to get a couple of tickets last night, so people can still order them, I would guess, this morning.
Absolutely. Yep. We should probably go on and edit that. I think the website asked for a timeline, and I think when we established it, we just put a date in there. We'll have to edit that. I didn't know that was there. Absolutely. You can go right on to our website, and there's a link, a Zephy link right on there. You can click on that. You can order a couple of eight, or you can order single tickets. Doors open at 6, and it runs for about 4 hours, and it's a really good time.
Well, that is terrific, and it's going to be a lot of music, and, you know, you already sold me with the corned beef and cabbage, you know, so that's great, and raffles and door prizes and all kinds of fun, and it goes to the New Hampshire Police Association Pipes and Drums, and it's a great organization, and as we heard in that clip, you guys play like over 100 events a year.
We just played yesterday. We had we played for all of our sponsors, and we did a pub crawl. We started down in Nashua and played over at Jameson's in Hampstead and worked our way all the way up into Manchester, ended up at the Strange Brew Tavern last night. So we just kind of giving back to all our sponsors and the people who help us throughout the year and help us raise money to keep us going. You know, then we give it back at the dinner, the corned beef and cabbage dinner. We'll be playing there as well. And, we're just trying to raise money just to keep this thing going.
Yeah, that is terrific, and it's outstanding. I've heard the music. We're going to play just a brief sample after we wrap this up, but people can still go online. Their tickets are there, but they are limited. And this is going to sell out because it does every year, right?
Yes, it does. Yep. We're coming into the last week because it is next Saturday. So we're coming into the last week, and we're giving one last push here so that we should sell out. And with the help of you, Ken, we really appreciate this.
Well, no problem at all, because I know what a great organization it is, and what great people are involved, and including yourself, Steve, and all the great work that you do. I know you've also established a scholarship program.
Yes, and we are going to announce some of the scholarship winners at the dinner. We run about 4 or 5 scholarships a year, depending on the funds that we raise. So a portion of the money raised from this dinner will go towards the scholarship funds. We take in applicants from all over the state of New Hampshire, and We read their essays and we go through the criteria, and we try to get back to some of the students, especially the criminal justice students, which we like to see to support law enforcement.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's going to be a great night. I haven't had the opportunity to attend one of your annual banquets in the past, but that's going to change on Saturday. And Steve, I will look for you.
All right, Kendall. Thank you very much once again.
Well, much appreciated, Steve, and see you Saturday.
Okay, thank you, and say hi to Carmen for me.
I will. I will do that. All right. And say hello to Jody for me, right?
Yeah, you got it. All right.
All right, thanks, Steve. And that's Steve Callanan, former New Hampshire State Trooper, who is a member of the New Hampshire Police Association Pipes and Drums. And Andrew, if you will, let's hear a little sample of their bagpiping before we go to our next break. The New Hampshire Police Association Pipes and Drums, just a little taste of it for you. And if you would like to attend the banquet, again, go on to nhpipesanddrums.com. You'll see a link where you can purchase tickets for this great event on Saturday night in Manchester from 6 to 10. And it's going to be held at the St. George Greek Orthodox Cathedral. You know where that is, right at the end of Hanover Street and Mammoth Road in Manchester. And it will be a great night. Corned beef and cabbage, great music, great fellowship, raffles, door prizes, you name it. It's going to be a fun night, and looking forward to attending. All right, we'll take a quick break and be back. Kale and Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. We'll be right back. Kale and Company Live here, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Monday, March 18th. Happy birthday to Dan Weed. Happy birthday to Brian Scalabrine, former Celtic, now a color analyst on their NBC Boston, NBC Sports Boston Celtics telecast. Scal turns 46 years old today. It's Act Happy Day. So even if you're not, act happy. That's one of the days today. It's also Dribble to Work Day. I guess ironic in the sense that Brian Scalabrine's birthday occurs on Dribble to Work Day as a former NBA player. It's also Forgive Mom and Dad Day and National Sloppy Joe Day. So I will ask our food correspondent, Andrew Gibson, behind the glass. Andrew, your thoughts on Sloppy Joe's.
Food correspondent. I got a promotion.
See, you did. Well, you did. See, I don't know if it'll mean a boost in pay. Probably
I don't
not.
Know about that. Probably
yeah,
not.
Yeah.
Sloppy Joe. I haven't had a good Sloppy Joe in a very long time. But yeah, I like a good Sloppy Joe.
It's funny. I was thinking the same thing. And I was honestly thinking about maybe making some, just because it happens to be Sloppy Joe Day. But I, like you, used to have them quite a bit. But
I mean,
I haven't.
In the 90s, Manwich was all the rage.
So. That's right. That is correct. So, yeah, it's National Sloppy Joe Day. Speaking of Joe, the wife of Joe Biden, our First Lady Jill Biden, is going to be in the state today. I think she's going to be in the Upper Valley area. So that marks second straight week when one of the Bidens has been in the state of New Hampshire. I guess trying to play makeup to the state for not being on the primary ballot, perhaps. I don't know what the impetus is that Joe would be here last week. Jill is going to be here today in the state of New Hampshire. You know, what it cost them $1,000 to get on the primary ballot. Instead, it cost them millions to advertise the fact that they wanted you to write Joe Biden in on the ballot. So what could have cost $1,000 cost millions. I guess we shouldn't be too surprised, should we? And the Biden administration is expected this week to finalize highly anticipated regulations targeting gas-powered vehicle tailpipe emissions, which we heard from Dan Weed, who knows a lot more about cars than Joe Biden, I'm sure, that tailpipe emissions are down considerably. But it is considered the tip of the spear in the administration's efforts to electrify the transportation sector. The Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, is slated to issue the final rulemaking, which officials have boasted will incentivize greater adoption of electric vehicles, but which opponents have criticized as a de facto mandate. As soon as Wednesday, industry sources told Fox News Digital that the incentivized adoption will be presented. The regulations, a key part of President Biden's climate agenda, would ultimately force automakers to more rapidly expand electric options in their fleets beginning in a matter of years. The American Energy Institute president and CEO Jason Isaac, who has researched the EV market, told Fox News Digital, and I quote, "It certainly won't do anything to improve human health. It won't do anything to reduce pollution. We've proven in this country that we're already a world leader in clean air. All it's going to continue to do is push the costs of electric vehicles onto purchasers of internal combustion engine vehicles. Now, this is purely being done for campaign reasons to really appease the leftist large donor base that are climate alarmists that are driving this movement towards really what is a forced energy transition, which is just increasing the cost of everything," Isaac added. And Isaac, by the way, I mentioned, is the American Energy Institute president and CEO. So I think he knows what he's talking about. Overall, under the proposal, which EPA unveiled in April 2023 and will go into effect in 2027, the White House projected that 67% of new sedan, crossover, SUV, and light truck purchases would be electric by 2032. 67% by 2032, which is not that far away, 8 years. In addition, up to 50% of bus and garbage truck, 35% of short-haul freight tractor, and 25% of long-haul, freight tractor purchases could also be electric by then, by 2032. They're talking about all those vehicles would be, a portion of them, a lot larger portion than there are now, would be electric vehicles. The White House said the proposal, which represents the most aggressive proposal of its kind ever proposed, would accelerate the clean vehicle transition and reduce oil imports by 20 billion barrels. Well, we should be energy independent anyway. And we were at one time, as you might recall, several years ago. But that all changed. Biden and climate activists have taken aim at the transportation sector over its high emissions profile. It alone produces roughly 29% of America's greenhouse gas emissions, federal data shows. In January, EPA submitted its final regulations to the White House for review, and in recent weeks, the Office of Management and Budget has hosted a flurry of meetings with energy industry officials, business leaders, automakers, and environmental activist groups, according to federal filings. And last month, the New York Times reported that the agency had endorsed its so-called Alternative C approach, which would loosen the rule implementation between 2027 and 2030, the early years of the proposal, before aggressively ramping up in 2031 and 2032. Industry groups said such an approach would be just as damaging for consumers, since the end result would remain unchanged. According to the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers President and CEO Chet Thompson, whose group has advocated against EPA's tailpipe regulations, he says, and I quote, "President Biden has been clear since 2020 that he intends to use his federal agencies and the state of California to eliminate the sales of gas cars." While multiple administration policies push us toward this end, the EPA's passenger vehicle standards will do most of the damage on their own, requiring approximately 70% of new car sales to be electric in less than 8 years. This policy is bad for consumers, the economy, and national security. It will sacrifice our hard-won U.S. energy strength for even greater dependence on China and the EV battery and mineral supply chain that China controls. And that is the words of CEO Chet Thompson of the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers. He added that for consumers, EPA's regulations will feel like a ban and vastly restrict both access to and the ability to afford new gas cars, trucks, SUVs, and traditional hybrids. Thompson further warned the EPA doesn't include any off-ramp in its proposal in the event the U.S. charging and power infrastructure isn't ready for such a rapid electrification of cars. So there you go, and certainly the infrastructure right now, I mean, right now, things could change along the way. And we're not slamming the technology of electric cars. It's just that for many people, they are unaffordable, at least at their current prices. And there are many on the lots, as I understand it, not only throughout New Hampshire, but throughout the country. So we'll see. I mean, the infrastructure, first of all, has to improve. And that's, you know, I mean, it is, you know, part of our future. No, there's no doubt about it. And a lot of people are driving electric vehicles right now. And there's nothing against the technology of it. It's just that it's unrealistic for many people. Anyway, that'll wrap it up for this edition. Thanks to John Leahy. Thanks to Steve Callanan for their participation today. Thanks for Andrew behind the glass, not only for teching the show, but making that great coffee with the cinnamon. We'll be back tomorrow with more excitement here at Kale and Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Remember to always look on the bright side of life.